You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1275.1C1407, certificate number 51913, Talking Drums.
You don't like talking about...
Drums?
Do you like talking about drums?
I do.
That's the name of the show, Talking Drums. Hey, John and I'll be talking drums.
Yeah, what's up, Slingerlands?
We're talking drums. Mm-hmm. Slingerlands, that's the people who like the drums?
No, well, I just coined it, so yes. Yeah. Hey, if you like drums, you're Slingerlands.
Like, if you like the Skins, yeah. that's what I say. No, you like guitar pedals, right? Effects pedals?
Yeah, too much. Lately, I've been going through a little bit of a weird phase with the guitar pedals.
So unusual for a middle-aged guy.
I know, and that's what's so terrible about it. I joined like a Facebook group, and then I joined another Facebook group, and it's one of these. It's like going to Alcoholics Anonymous,
except if they just showed you pictures of alcohol and really pushed alcohol.
Yeah, it's like any group you join, like that, an affinity group. You realize I hate these people. I really. The only thing worse than an alcoholic that's drinking is an alcoholic that's not drinking. Neither one of them as bad as people who never drank, the ultimate worst. Sorry, present company excluded.
Those are the worst.
Yeah, you can't even talk to them.
Worst of both worlds. They would be terrible drunks, and it's just an accident of what? Upbringing or virtue that keeps them from it. So they walk around in this cloud of holiness.
Yeah, that's why we started drinking in the first place, the rest of you. And then we're awful until we stop drinking, and then we're worse. But with guitar pedal people, the thing is that all the great guitar players really have one or two or three effects pedals. They have their amp, and then they have a pedal that makes it louder, and then maybe another pedal that makes it even louder.
It's just a piano. You're describing a piano.
That's right. You just hit it harder. And then there's one or two pedals that like either make it echo or they make it go something like that.
Not everybody has that one, right?
Well, no, but like Jimi Hendrix had one that, you know. And so that's all you need. And for years I toured and I had just that. A pedal that made it louder, a pedal that made it louder again. Maybe one that made it loud and fuzzy, and then something that echoed.
I don't understand why you need the first two.
Because you're playing.
Can you just push it down a little more?
Hey me, hey you. And then you're like, and now the chorus. And you step on a thing. And then the guitar goes, ka-tang. And you're like, yeah, now we're jazz.
These are all off or on. You can't push it down a little and get a little reverb.
You can. There are pedals like a wah-wah pedal or a volume pedal that are like paint. You can control some things.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Pedal. So you don't need the louder and the much louder pedal. You just need one loud pedal and a little bit of foot exercises.
Well, there's the other element, which is
calf stretches.
You know, you want one that sounds, they all sound slightly different, Ken. Mm. So you don't want one that just has a functionality, but it doesn't sound rad. But this is the thing. It's all just a game. The really great guitar players just use their volume knob on the guitar. If you notice, most electric guitars have four knobs.
Right.
98% of all guitarists never touch any of them. But with those four knobs, you can make the guitar do 1,000 things. It's just complicated because you have to look down and move a knob.
Well, yeah, you don't have the third hand for the knobs.
Right.
That's why pedals. Hence pedals.
Hence pedals. But if you go on a Facebook middle-aged man guitar pedal forum,
people
are posting, you know, these floor units that are 4 foot wide by 3 feet deep. They have 90 pedals. They cost $20,000. And they're just all variations of like louder, slightly louder, and then one that goes, and then one that echoes.
And is it inverse variation, like the better the guitarist, the less likely they are to have some expensive.
You really don't want to say something like that because there's always going to be an example of like, well, what about blah, blah, blah.
What about the guy from Rush?
Yeah, those guys didn't. Their pedals weren't crazy, you know. And you throw some name like, oh, what about Nuno Bettencourt? And it's like, no, he's got 3 pedals taped to the floor with duct tape. But what happened to me was I was going through the basement. I was pulling stuff out. And I pulled out this bin of guitar pedals. Because in the 80s and 90s, guitar pedals, they weren't expensive, really. And people got bored of them, and there wasn't a resale market exactly. You could take one to the store and get $20 and trade for it. But a lot of people would just say, hey, do you want this? Like, I've got this chorus pedal. I'm not using it. Do you want it? Or you'd have a practice space, and there'd just be pedals lying around. You go, oh, huh, well, maybe I'll try this for a while. There were no guys with 40 pedals on their board unless they were trying to be a shoegaze band.
Is it because they hadn't found each other on the internet yet?
You know, there wasn't an internet.
Yeah.
And
nobody had fetishized the stuff, created an aftermarket.
They had, but I think the experience was universal, which is if you put more than 5 pedals in a signal chain, it just sounds like garbage. What do you get? You can't. An octave pedal and a delay pedal? Already you're into sounds like garbage land. And also, most pedals had 3 knobs. There was volume, tone, and maybe one other function, right? Like time or...
How can a pedal have a knob?
Well, pedals have knobs. There's an on-off switch, there's knobs.
You have to be very good with your toes?
Well, no, you don't turn the knobs.
You pre-knob them, and then...
Some kooks will turn a knob with their toes, but most of the time you set it how you want it, and then you try not to turn them.
Which guitarists have like really prehensile toes?
That's the thing.
Slash?
Well, no, those guys that play in bands where there's an oriental carpet on the stage and they're all barefoot. Those people.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I pull out this bin. Well, I was never some pedal maniac. I never went and bought new pedals. I just got pedals. They just come to you.
Pedal magnet.
And it's just like Bic lighters. I never bought a Bic lighter once in my life, but I have a mason jar, or I used to. It was 4 feet tall that had so many Bic lighters because somebody hands you their lighter and then...
You're just describing kleptomania.
Yeah.
I never buy any of these things, and my friends are all missing theirs.
How did I get all these Zippos? I don't know.
It's amazing.
Because you light your cigarette or whatever, and then you put the lighter in your pocket.
The wilderness just provides.
I don't know. So I pull this out, and I put all the pedals out on the floor, and I realize I have 80 pedals.
And you don't have 80 feet.
I don't have 80 feet, and most of them are... Either a pedal that makes it slightly louder, a pedal that makes it a little bit louder than that, or a pedal that goes or is an echo. But I also have all these other pedals that as I'm describing, at some point in the early 90s, nobody wanted. It was some kind of effects pedal that people thought was corny. It wasn't grunge. It was some corny effect. And I just put them in a bin. So anyway, I lay them all out on the floor. I'm looking at them.
Your bin of corny pedals.
I feel kind of ridiculous at having them all. And then, talk about middle-aged man problem. I realized I have almost a full set of each brand.
The completism,
yes,
thing turns on in your brain.
I have all of the all of the Boss pedals, all of the DOD pedals, all of the MXR pedals, all of the Electro Harmonix pedals to make an entire pedal board brand exclusive.
And you were so close. You have 80 pedals. You're so close to getting rid of them all.
Yes.
And now you're like, the other solution would be to have 84 pedals.
That's right. And so I went online and I was like, where do I find, you know, what I really need is the DOD pedal that does this. And it became an eBay affliction, you know, a new problem for me. I should have been selling all of these things, you know, 80 pedals. It's not too late
to go down to zero.
I mean, I had some, I posted a picture of a pedal and somebody was like, you know, that pedal's worth $900.
Oh.
And I was like, that's impossible. And I looked it up and it was worth $900. It doesn't do anything different. I could make that sound on my phone right now, even better. Any computer could duplicate every iteration of that sound. But the pedals are fetish items. Anyway, Ken, embarrassingly, I have now spent hundreds of additional dollars.
To get a few more.
And then, embarrassingly, I realized that each one of these brands, at some point, because all of my pedal collections are 1984 specific. I don't want any modern pedals that have more than three knobs. I want to recreate each brand of pedal board as you would find it in 1984.
This is every middle-aged hobby.
It's like, so bad.
I don't want the toys from now. I want the toys I had or could not have a child.
It's a train set.
I want the baseball cards from when these things were still magical to me.
That's exactly it, right? This is the B&O Railroad. It's not Amtrak. It's not like your current. I'm doing. And so, yes, now I realize that each of those pedal companies also probably made a pedal board specific to the shape of their pedals.
Like to mount them in?
Yeah. It's like a case that has the name of the brand. This is a level of dumb. It's so far away from writing a good song, which is what I should be trying to do.
That must be part of the appeal of it, though.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about this, you don't have to worry about the song.
It feels very close to trying to write music or make music. Although I'm not kidding myself that having a different delay pedal is going to help me. I just want it because, what is that impulse? It feels weird. I wake up in the morning and I'm thinking about some 1984 pedal that makes the guitar go pew, and I've never made a guitar do that live.
It sounds like you do need the AA of guitar pedal accumulation.
But when I go online, there's all these other guys that are like, well, this pedal is, and it's all, they're dumb. I hate them.
The thing I wanted to know about was,
was any of that what you wanted?
No, that was all way off. And we're going to cut it out.
If only we ever cut anything out.
I knew from your Instagram what I was going to get, but I was hoping it would build up to this. Do you have one of those weird things that Peter Frampton used to make his guitar talk?
No.
Oh!
I don't, because a talk box, although it sounds cool.
Yes.
It basically sounds like a wah-wah pedal, except if you want to say something.
Except with a tube.
You want to be like, mom, do you feel like I do?
I am John's guitar.
But the problem with it is it looks weird.
It does.
You're standing there at your microphone, and then you put like what looks like a hospital tube in your mouth, like a feeding tube.
It is, basically. That's what it is.
And you put it in the side of your mouth, and you do something to it. I never thought it looked cool.
I was looking at a video of Peter Frampton doing it. And he's very, you know, it's 1970 and he's very good looking. And
he's handsome.
He's a very good looking guy. So it kind of sells it. I'm like, hey. And he's kind of devilishly looking askance at the audience of the camera, like, look what I can do. Yeah. Look what I can do.
Well, and he says a swear word or something, and the room goes crazy.
But then I saw the guy from Weezer doing it. Yeah. It's not that many guitarists trying out the talk box.
And then the guy from Weezer does not make it look cool.
That did not make me think. But I guess it had never occurred to me how this worked when you buy a guitar and learned how to make it talk. Like, you really have to, you run, as you say, like a feeding tube up to your mouth, and then by changing the shape of your mouth as if you're articulating those words, the whatever the guitar sound is doing then goes back through the mic, now altered by the shape of your mouth. When it sounds like you're in Epcot Center in 1985.
One of the things I have learned from talking to a lot of guitar players who have used them.
Do you talk to them via this thing?
Yeah. Hey, what
could you tell me about your pedal talk box?
They say that through the tube, it pushes air at you.
Oh, it's actually air.
Yeah, and that it
wait, this is a hydraulic.
Yeah, guitar pedal? If you're not ready for it, it's like it's a shocking amount of air that you have to push against. When you're doing the like hoary imp whoop, you're like actively working against some air moving through there, and that's kind of how. I don't know. I've never done one, so
this is for guys who are doing a rock show and are like, I wish this felt more like being at the dentist.
Yeah, it's an oral fixation thing, like so much in drug culture. It's like, what can I put, get my tongue around?
I guess there is like, this is not uncool because it's not that different from having a cigarette dangling from the side of my
joint
mouth.
Or some kind of hookah. It's really a hookah tube.
I count a joint as a cigarette.
Yeah.
A jazz cigarette.
I won't push back on that.
You guys still say that, right?
Like I would on a talk box tube.
You guys still say jazz cigarette.
Jazz cigarette. Yeah, more and more. It's very Gen Z. It's super Riz.
It's coming back.
Yeah.
So like this was like the first time I saw it, which I think might have been a Simpsons episode.
Of course, like so many things in your life, the first time encountered it.
How Gen X discovered. And now it's like, now it's young kids still watching Simpsons on Disney Plus and then learning about Lollapalooza or, you know, learning about 90s or 2000s stuff.
My daughter is just at the age now where she's watching The Simpsons and she'll go, that's a Hamlet reference. And I'm like, well done, daughter. Like now you're at the next level of Simpsons appreciation, which is you're starting to get like that level of reference. Just wait, because there are so many other levels.
But I was so lame. I didn't realize that the guitarist used the mouth as a resonator. Like I thought there was...
What? What did you think?
I guess I thought there was some like thing he was doing with his foot that made different vowels or consonants or just with the strings he could kind of approximate.
Well, that's what it is. You're singing along with the guitar as you play it.
Yes, but the guitar, you're not doing that much with your hands to make a different consonant or vowel sound.
No, that's all coming from your mouth, right. but what's happening on the guitar is the pitch. So you're like, do you feel like I do? Yes. And that the pitch is your string. And you're putting vibrato. I mean, you know, if you're Peter Frampton, I'm sure you're doing all kinds of things.
And I always loved sound effects stuff. Right. Like
you had sound effects records, didn't you?
Yeah, like when, like my dad had bought some Make Fun Sounds With Your Mouth. And it was some guy that would show up on Tom Snyder being like, and then I think you could have a trumpet. And then, oh, look, your faucet's leaky, Tom.
Look, you learned them all.
That's the only one I could do. I can do the... But it doesn't come up that much.
Did he say, what was that song? Don't Worry, Be Happy? Did he pat on himself?
This was before Don't Worry, Be Happy. Yeah. So this was very much like the lamest novelty guy you can imagine.
Right.
And he's just some kind of silver-haired, dopey, Dick Van Dyke-looking white guy in a plaid shirt. You know,
making balloon animals.
Exactly. And, yeah. It's a circus. It's a elementary school assembly level entertainment. But I was just fascinated by this because you could just, you could practice yourself in your bedroom or in your car.
That's right. It's throwing your voice, basically.
And then at some point, I had a teacher who could do Donald Duck voice.
Oh, ow.
Hey, that's not that bad. Are you saying things?
Yeah, maybe.
say something. Say many goods and cheese.
Not very well.
I don't understand.
No, it's not.
Because I feel like I finally
figured
out the principle of it, which is like you're not using your larynx. You know, normally you've got these chords that you can change the shape of, and that makes different perceived sounds come out of your mouth. But what if you turned a little pocket kind of in your upper cheek?
Yeah.
It's called buccal speech, like related to the cheek or whatever.
Oh.
So you make a little air pocket up there, a little resonator.
See, I put mine down at where you would put chewing tobacco.
Yours is low. Do you feel like chewing tobacco is how you got there? Like,
No, I think I was trying to do Donald Duck before I ever chewed tobacco. Oh, see, you have a more exciting version.
Yeah, but you can't really articulate. You can't, like, I can't make sounds. I can't make different vowels if I'm just going like he does when he's mad. Because the guy can do Donald Duck when he's mad, and anybody can do that. But like, the guy can also make him say, like, Daisy, I brought you flowers.
Yeah.
And I can't go like.
Our ASMR listeners are not sure what to do right now.
Are they happy? Are they jumping off, jumping out of their apartment window?
Some of them have probably thrown their headphones on the floor, and some of them are just like, just really damp.
I guess you should watch the levels. Yeah.
Oh, right. The levels.
maybe I was a little too close to the mic when I was like,
oh, that's all right.
But there's just some, you know, some consonants you can do because you don't need, you know, you can do a P or a T, but, you know, how do you do an O sound, a long O?
Yeah. It feels like everything. It's just like any magic trick. You have to sit and play with the cards for 4 years past what any normal person would have done.
And maybe we can't. Maybe if I spent 4 years, you know.
Oh, you're not gifted.
Yeah, maybe
in that
Clarence
way.
Nash, the guy, you know, had the exact shape of his cheek that would let him do Donald Duck.
Right.
And it's like the Dalai Lama. There's like one of those a generation.
And the rest of us are just on an unwinnable quest.
We have the normal lip and cheek shape that won't. But it's actually pretty
common. Stop being cheek normative, Ken.
Exactly. I'm cheek diver. I'm buccal divergent. I'm bucco atypical. There are many cultures where, you know, speech, or at least, you know, something linguistic, something communicative is conveyed through music, and not just in the common way of, you know, that might occur to us, like, you know, a bugle charge. Like if you hear this, you ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, you advance. And if you hear
ba-da-ba-da,
yeah, you retreat. What if everybody in the Civil War had a trombonist? There's a bugler when you advance and the trombone guy comes out when you retreat.
I was talking to a bunch of teenagers the other day. They were all in band and I was asking them how they picked their instruments and they were like, trumpet, I had to, you know, ba-da-ba-da-ba. They were all kind of bleh about their instruments. And I was like, there's no trombonist among you? No, trombone just seems like boo. And I said, but it's the ultimate, like, shutdown instrument, because anytime anybody in band says something dumb, you can go, womp, womp, and their eyes all lit up.
It has not occurred to them.
No, they didn't realize that the trombone was like the seventh grade super weapon. And I think they all walked out of there just kind of shell shocked that they had made a mistake.
Did you just create a generation of trombonists?
I hope.
You should go from school to school.
Look, kids, I'm here for one reason.
I know you all want to play the clarinet, losers.
Have you ever seen that? Have you ever Googled the trombone bands of Harlem? There are all these wonderful videos of these groups. And maybe it's just one group that I've watched 50 times, but it's like seven people playing trombone on street corners in Harlem, and it's the greatest thing you ever saw. Just like super, super rock and roll.
I guess the trombone can only say one thing, though. It can say, too bad.
No, it can also go, too bad.
But does that convey too bad? I mean,
no, you're right. It doesn't.
Like, my trombone could not say, you know, refreshments at 7 o'clock, or,
right,
you know, doors open now, or guests are coming to see the chief. Like, all the things that you would want a quasi-linguistic musical instrument to say.
Now, is Korean a tonal language?
Korean is not tonal, but tonal languages are very important to this story because you can probably, as a moment's thought will reveal, it's easier to convey a tonal language in music because you've got those pitch glides on every syllable. You know, it's very difficult for a musical instrument to convey a consonant sound, for example.
Oh, huh?
And even vowels are a little bit tricky, as we'll see. But pitch glides are pretty easy. And so that's why the Hmong people of
the highlands of Vietnam.
Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam use a flute. There's like a flute called the Hmong Raj, which is kind of their national instrument of here's how we convey information. China, there's like a Jew's harp like gourd organ where you can, it's an aerophone, so you can make it make all kinds of crazy. That's not me doing racist Asian language. That's me trying to sound like a Jew's harp.
Right.
Plong, 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 plong. But by varying the
Do
shape
we call
of the
them
mouth.
Mouth harps now? No, that's what a harmonica is called.
No, I think you're right.
Jaw harp.
A harmonica is a, yes, exactly. But jaw that, harp. But that's transparently, let's change the E to an A.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, right.
Is it not okay to say Jew's harp? I thought you still could. I thought maybe it would be a point of pride.
Well, it's just one of those things where, is it okay? It depends on who you're asking.
If we're not allowed to say Jew's harp, please. Also, it most likely originated in Siberia and has no relation to the Jewish people. So maybe it's better not to do it.
Yeah, well.
Jaw harp, mouth harp, Ozark harp. Please do not say juice harp.
Juice harp?
Because not only is it transparently using the phonetics of Jews, but it also is gross.
Yeah, well, but it sounds very Appalachian.
No, you don't want to emphasize the juice.
It's a juice.
If you've got something sprunging in your mouth, please don't emphasize the juiciness of it. You know.
But
what I mean?
You're saying is that flute, the Hmong flute, or this boinger, Chinese boinger,
can actually convey
language across a distance.
Yeah, and the distance is important, of course, because you know, imagine a time when this was the best way to carry messages. There's no telegraph, there's no radio, there's no cell phones. Systems like this could get important community news 5 miles away, and then you know, a repeater could get back on his whatever. I mean. When I say 5 miles, I'm thinking about the drums of the Yoruba people of West Africa, Southwest Nigeria, and part of Ghana, because that's kind of the most interesting musico-linguistic traditions, and the one I wanted to talk about today. And yeah, they're conveying not just like the equivalent of linguistics like we do with Morse code. They're actually using very close analogs of the phonetics of their own spoken language.
Wow!
The same way that Peter Frampton or Donald Duck Guy would, just move to a different resonator.
I always assumed that it was like the knot-tying language of the Andes.
The Inca?
Or Morse code, that it was in the rhythm that some amount of communication. I didn't realize that
it was two longs and a short. That means,
yeah, exactly.
That means the chief wants to see.
Or like dun, 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 dun. Some pattern of drums had encoded messages, but I didn't realize it was like talking.
No, what's really interesting is the talking drums are literally talking. Now, just so you can picture this, Yoruba drums come in many sizes. The one most commonly used for this is called a dun dun. It's the size where you can kind of put it under your arm.
Yeah. And you hit it with a curved mallet.
Yeah,
right?
There's a kind of a, it's like a lowercase curved T without the crossbar. And it's usually got rubber or equivalent on one end so you can hit the membrane without scarring or puncturing it.
Are you insane in the membrane?
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing at a high enough level,
yeah,
right. I think it's kind of up to the drummer.
Okay.
Whether the level of their insanity or membranity. Membraneousness.
Thank you.
They're hourglass shaped. The resonator is wood. It's from a Spanish elm or whatever the African name for that tree is. It's a hourglass shape. And the membranes on both ends, I think traditionally, and this was kind of gross to me, maybe this came up when we talked about vellum, their fetal calf. Did we ever talk about stillborn leather?
The incredible resonance of stillborn leather.
I guess it's thinner.
It's like, I remember that Ricardo Montalban
commercial. The incredible resonance of stillborn. I don't think you don't want to drive a Pontiac or whatever with fetal calf on the seats.
Do you not, though? That's the veal eating class.
A very evil kind of rich person is like, you know, this isn't just veal. This is actually fetal. Yeah, Cruella de Vil.
That's why it's called a de Vil. It's a Cadillac de Vil.
I think today it's more like young goats that are chosen for thin skinned. That's bad, right?
Like somebody there at the gates
insulting the goats to see which one is, yes, like, hey,
hey,
okay, you're a drum. Just because I guess the thinner it is, the better touch or sound or whatever for the drummer. There's a strap so you can put it around your neck, but the top and the bottom, the two membranes are connected by these series of cords.
Sinews.
They are sinews, yeah. They're often intestine or, you know, catgut or whatever. I think it could just be any kind of thin leather, but...
Our vegetarian ASMR listeners or PETA members are really stomping around now.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the traditional African drums of the 18th century.
Right.
So which way makes you a better ally?
That's right. Which way are you going to...
What are you going to fall here?
Yeah.
Maybe they support the sound and the tradition, of course, but what we need is some kind of pleather.
That's right.
Some kind of vegan... cruelty-free drum materials.
Our super sensitive neurodivergent goat listeners are
we apologize to the fetal goats of the future listening in utero. You have nothing to worry about.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So these cords that connect the two membranes kind of go around in a cylinder. So you really can't even see the hourglass wooden resonator because you've got these cords. And then just to make sure they stay taut with changes in temperature and humidity, some kind of leather or wool sash around the middle of it that you can kind of belt so that the cords are taut. Because then what happens is you either hold it in one hand or tuck it under, kind of tuck it in an armpit, depending on the size of it. Then in your other hand, you're tapping the membrane with your curved mallet.
We just call it the head of the drum.
The head of the drum. You're tired of me saying membrane.
I don't know, membrane. Just feels like let's pivot to head.
The head of the drum. And I guess if you've got it tucked in one armpit, you can also kind of use your other hand to do kind of this. You've seen West African drum. There's secondary tapping going on with the other hand as well.
I've played them.
Are you good?
No, but they're so amazing that, I mean, I'm clearly not good because I didn't even realize they were speaking a language, but you can do, like you're saying, you're tapping it with your fingers on one side, hitting it with the mallet, squeezing it under your arm.
And meanwhile, Erykah Badu is saying, get off the stage, please.
What the hell are you doing?
Who are you?
How did you get up here? But, you know, you can do those three things and, you know, you're kind of squeezing it under your arm like a bagpipe.
The squeezing is the important thing because that changes the tension on those cords.
Right.
And that's what alters the pitch. So as you're hitting, you can, you know, a tone that you've already produced on the head of the drum, you can then squeeze it and then it goes... And that's
As you squeeze it, it goes up.
The other way. Yeah, so that's where you get that. That's where you get that sound of the musical sound of African drumming. Is both things are happening.
And the bip is your other hand, right? Kind of hitting the little snary things.
And so this, you're not wrong that this is not. You're not just. You weren't accidentally saying, "Can I sleep with your mother-in-law or whatever?"
Like I was purposely doing it.
David Byrne was like, "Please stop that."
But the thing is, I was saying it out loud as I was doing. Can I sleep with your mother-in-law?
So there are different tiers of playing. You know, these can totally just be used, especially now for rhythms. You know, to dance to
rhythms,
to back up another instrument. But you know, in their kind of original form, you know, these are attested back to the early 1700s and probably go back further than that. There's a Yoruba myth that the original drum, talking drum, was invented by Ayangalu, you know, the first great drummer, who was later kind of deified, and he's now worshipped as the Orisha, the spirit of drumming.
Wow.
Because, you know, Yoruba culture has all these Orisha, you know, it's what becomes Santeria, basically, when it comes across.
It's a pantheon.
The Atlantic. Yeah, it's a pantheon of spirits of different elements of life and culture and nature. And drumming is its own god, basically, and it's this guy who got deified.
Wow.
I don't know who that would be for us. Neil Peart.
The god of drumming, yeah. I don't know. Neil Peart, yeah, divisive. Some people would say no.
I was just trying to make you mad.
No, I'm not. I'm trying,
Listeners mad at you when you say something about Rush. Go.
Ringo. Ringo is the god.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, yes. That made so many people mad right
Solid
now.
Solid backbeat.
Yeah. All the fans of Megadeth are like, Ringo.
No, I've been watching YouTube videos of like drummers being like, I still can't figure out how Ringo did this or that.
Well, that's the thing. It's like now it's a point of pride to be like pro Ringo.
Actually.
Because for years there, you know, people were dismissive, and then all the drum scientists were like, hey man, you're not getting it.
Real ones know. So back then, you know, when and it's kind of equivalent to these Greek myths of like, and then Hermes invented the lyre, you know, like there is actually this origin. It's so important to their society that there's this origin story of the first guy.
Somebody fell from the heavens, presumably, right? With these powers.
Well, you know, he started out as an earthly and then got deified.
Okay.
He's just a guy.
So there's still a chance for me.
That's right. What are you going to invent?
Well, I've been on a journey. Like a spiritual journey. Who knows what I'm going to invent?
Some kind of guitar board.
Maybe I've already done it and people just don't understand it yet.
You're going to be the Orisha of a complete 1984 guitar board. So like they're storytellers. You know, griots are huge in different African cultures. They're the people who keep alive the oral folklore. So these storytellers started to use the drums to express proverbs, to recite poetry. So you'd go to a concert and you're not just hearing a fun beat to dance to or a good time, something to chew whatever your addictive leaf is to. Like you're actually hearing phonetic, quasi-phonetic content. Like,
and then they became songs that were recognizable to everyone. And so you could lay out a proverb and everybody would get what is presumably like the additional cultural information.
Right.
That they would hear, but also would have all these meanings
that's the tricky part. I mean, how is meaning conveyed? Clearly, a drum is not going to have the same expressive equivalence as the human vocal cords, you know, the human larynx.
Right.
And we talked about how Yoruba is a language with pitches. In fact, Yoruba has three pitches. So if people don't understand what a tonal language is, it's not just the actual phonemes you're saying, or even, you know, there's other things you could alter, but it's actually kind of the pitch that changes as you say a syllable. Does it go up? Is it high? Does it go down? Is it low? In Chinese, in Mandarin, there's four tones, and one of them goes down, then up.
Okay.
So, you know, you could, you know, there's a famous Chinese puns, you know, stories of foreigners who go to the zoo and ask to see the pandas, and they're really saying, can I see your chest hair?
Yeah.
Because they said the right syllable, but they didn't nail the tone. So, you know, you can, in Chinese, you can say, you just repeat the syllable ma with different, you know, ma rising, ma falling, ma flat and high, ma, like low and then high. And then you can say things like, mom rides a horse, the horse is slow, mom swears at the horse. But really, you're just, if you're not aware of the tones, you're just hearing ma, 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 ma. But it's ma, 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 ma. You know, there's, I'm not going to attempt
it. I wonder what you just said.
Something very offensive in Mandarin.
Maybe not.
I want to see your chest hair.
Maybe all the Mandarin listeners are going like, ha, ha, Ken.
Ken wants to sleep with my mother-in-law.
You said it.
So in Yoruba, there are three tones. There's flat, rising, and falling. So like if you say ra, flat, that means rub. But if you say ra, like rising, that means to disappear. And ra, falling, would be to buy.
Right.
So you can see how with one of these resonators you could squeeze, you know, it's possible to produce those tones.
Ra.
But that doesn't solve the problem because many bits of utterance are going to have the same series of tones. So how do you do that in a drum? Yoruba syllable will always have a central vowel and often a beginning consonant. And really, they kind of bail on the consonants. Like, there's no way to make a drum say an F versus a K versus a P.
Just the same way that the Swiss Germans are only speaking half of the German language.
Or, you know, the Quebecois,
right?
For example.
No. Don't get them started. Please, do not write us the Quebecois.
So no separatist groups? We're
well, no, I'm just saying you mentioned them, and then they're they're going to sit to the front of their chairs waiting for you to say something wrong.
They're going
to
say their...
Well, any French would do that.
They're going to say their weird religious swears, like overalls of the Virgin Mary. Like, and that's the rudest thing you could say in Montreal.
We hate everyone, and you especially.
But, you know, when you think about speech, or like any sound, you're really just hearing a series of minute variations in air pressure, you know? Like all speech is a series of beats hitting your ear. And the ear and the brain have been trained to pull out the information that tells you what syllable, what vowel, what timbre you're hearing. I guess in linguistics, there's a frequency-related term called the formant, which is just kind of the base frequency that tells you what vowel you're hearing. And it's weird to think that vowel sounds are associated with pitch and frequency, but they are. Like if I say E, that seems higher somehow than O. And I think if you saw a web form of me saying O, oo, or oo, O, A, E, you can see it kind of get higher in pitch.
Well, when you just said, but they are, the way you said are is much different than if you'd said, but they are.
But they are.
And we never think about that, right?
Right.
The meaning that you conveyed in the way you pronounced R is not apparent to us, but of course R is pretty complicated.
I don't know if I told you this, but when I was first asked to guest host Jeopardy, they gave me a set of scripts that Alex had already gone over, and he had written like essentially musical notation above the words of the clue to kind of show like these words run together. Here's where the pause is. Here's what you emphasize. So it wasn't exactly like the pitch of every syllable.
Yeah.
But he wanted to convey to himself in the moment, like to really get the right information, to convey the right sense of meaning here.
Instead of saying, what are the blank? He would say, what are the blank? Or something to that effect.
Yeah, like I notice when I do it wrong. Like if I say, you know, if you hit the wrong word, you can be like the ocean liner implies that there's a different kind of liner coming, you know? Uh-huh. So, like, sometimes you want to make sure you do that because it'll help the players. Sometimes it'll confuse the players.
Did you adopt Alex's shorthand?
I do. Like, when I get a script now, I do his little ties and kind of...
You use his notation?
I do.
Wow. What a behind-the-scenes gift you've just given us.
Amazing. Boy, the fans are hopping on the forums right now.
And I wonder what advantage it can give you, what microsecond of advantage it can get you to hear Ken's little glissandos.
I mean, it's nothing special. Like, you know, everybody's accustomed to hearing speech, and especially in a kind of a tight question and answer form like that. You know, you really want to hit the part that helps them get to the answer. You want to emphasize distinctions that are being made or contrasts that are being made in the clue. Like, it's nothing that specialized, but you notice if somebody does it wrong.
Well, now, I have all these questions. I thought you were working from a teleprompter. Are you not? Does your little podium have your handwritten notes?
No, I there is no prompter. I do have a screen on my podium, but Alex did not. He had a big piece of paper, and he would X out clues with a crayon.
What a David Letterman thing.
Right.
But he never threw them over his shoulder.
Sometimes you would see him at the break, he would still be gesturing with the pen like he's Bob Dole.
Yeah.
Because he would use... A pen would squeak occasionally, so he switched to these long black crayons that he would have imported from Japan or something.
Of course.
Because they were silent.
And so do you use the screen or do you use the paper and
when
pen?
I first started hosting, I was using the paper and crayon. But during the guest host, they kind of child-proofed the show to make it, I mean, to eliminate mistakes. Like a host doing that can just go off on their own and read the clue that's not on the board. So in order to synchronize the clue with the board better, they put in a screen. But here's what happens. I still get a paper script. I still mark it up with all the, you know, pronunciation notes and Alex's little notation and all the rest. You know, do not accept whatever if I need to write notes to myself like that.
This gives me so much pleasure.
And then, never too much detail about about quiz shows. That's our motto here on Omnibus. And then that gets scanned in before every show.
Oh my God. This must cost $1,000.
I think new people were hired just to run this massive scanning operation.
This costs $80,000 a year, $180,000 a year.
So if I could just host at Alex levels, we could fire all these people. But no, right. I will never be able to.
Okay, now here's my final question. This is Final Jeopardy. What happens to your handwritten notes? Do they get put into a shredder or are they things you could sell on a special website?
They do get collected after. There is a lot of shredding on Jeopardy because they're very concerned about the security of the questions and answers. Like,
right.
I mean, that would just break the show if somebody
yeah,
could figure out how to hack the Jeopardy writers, you know, to get the clues in advance.
Right.
Like that's a FCC violation, not to mention it would be just a terrible outcome for the show. But sometimes the scripts do get preserved. I think they do get filed. Like if you go to a taping, I know you've been like in the little back area behind the bleachers where you sit, there's a little hall of fame that has a lot of artifacts from the show.
Yeah, that's cool.
It is cool. So you could take a picture at Alex's old podium, and on atop the lectern, they have, I think it's the script from my last game, actually.
Oh, wow. How cool.
They could have chosen from 74 games where I win.
Right.
But instead, the game that I lose is up there, and it is his printed script. So I think they do survive sometimes.
And is it printed on the script? Oh, sorry, Ken, because they had it planned in advance.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's kill this kid.
This is the clue he gets wrong. He's never been to H&R Block. No, they would never do such a thing. But yeah, so there's these. So we're our ears and brain are attuned to pulling information out of pitches. And I didn't notice this till I started to sleep with a white noise or a pink noise machine.
Whoa, that's not what I thought you were saying.
I never knew about this till I started to sleep with
a
Yoruba
whom.
Woman. Do you ever use a white noise machine to sleep
no,
with?
No, I can't stand all that stuff, although maybe I should, but I don't.
Really? As a kid, you never had a fan on in the summer? I mean, think I've been conditioned to find it soothing because we were poor and didn't have AC.
Yeah, maybe a fan. I mean, we're from Alaska. There wasn't any hot day. But lately,
there weren't hot days here. Actually, yeah, I wasn't that poor. It's just nobody had air conditioning in Seattle in the '80s.
No, my sister has a whole dedicated little box and all these different sounds.
It's her guitar pedal.
Yeah, and my daughter likes it sometimes. But I just feel, you know, the other day, what was it? I was on a bus in Ingelang, and there was someone talking that I found extremely annoying.
What they were saying or just the quality of the
both
voice?
Both things. Okay. And my family was on the bus with me, and they could tell that I did not like this person. And, you know, my family recognizes that I'm a very sensitive person. And to the degree that they are paying attention, which is to say to
much.
A very narrow degree, when they do see that I'm sitting there kind of like, they try to help me.
Like circle the wagons.
Yeah, and they're not like exasperated with me. They actually see like, oh, this is affecting
they're
me.
Like your emotional support.
They're trying
companions.
To be. And so one of them put a headphone on me and put
you're
on like here, Dad.
You're
you know?
Like you're just like some like 6-year-old on the spectrum, like yeah, let's sure. keep John quiet on the bus.
For sure. and they put some kind of music, you know, some playlist. And they handed it to me, and I was immediately irritated by the playlist. But I looked at the thing, and it said ambient, something ambient, like music for airports.
I actually listen to Brian Eno on planes.
Yeah. And so I clicked on this ambient playlist, and immediately my headphones were filled with like, and I was soothed.
You just sailed away to a higher plane.
And whatever this person was, rabba, dabba, dabba, I was, yeah, you know, he was gone. And all of us, after 20 minutes of this, I was like, why did no one, A, tell me about this technology? I don't want to listen to music, but I do want this going on because I feel like a future person.
Yeah, occasional chiming is happening in your head.
And so all this. Because years ago, I got a whole Sonos setup because I had a friend that worked there, and he was like, do you want a Sonos?
Like in your house?
Yeah, and I said, I don't know what that is, and he sent me like 9 speakers. And it's all been in bins.
Next to the corny pedals?
Yeah, and I went and found my Sonos stuff, and I started to try and hook it up, and I knocked over a shelf, and you know, and all of a sudden there was some dial phone that was off the hook. But the idea was I'm going to set this up in my house and play ambient music all the time, not to put myself to sleep, but to feel like I'm in the future.
That's right.
And then I'm going to be, I guess, calm. It's going to disrupt those thoughts that are constantly coming into my head about some guy that insulted me in 1989.
Is it working? Does Brian Eno banish intrusive thoughts?
After I knocked over the shelf.
Oh, it's not happening.
On top of the shelf, there was a stack. You know how we often get foreign currency here?
Yeah.
And I've collected foreign currency over the years, and I didn't know what to do with it. So I put it all on top of this shelf. Well, when the shelf fell over, this cloud of foreign currency, 700 bills, went flying up in the air, and they landed all over the house.
You've got a new fun activity now.
So
you're Scrooge McDuck.
I was so just like overwhelmed and sad at this mess I had created for myself that it's been 3 days and I still am just stepping around all these bot and koi and whatever else.
I have trained myself to sleep with like a pink noise machine, not because...
What is a pink noise?
Well, white noise is every frequency kind of at the same... And it's a little bit harsh.
Yeah.
You can by modeling the waveform a little more, you can make more pleasing colors. Pink noise, brown noise.
What do they sound? Brown noise, that's gonna make you poop.
No, brown noise is it's warmer. It sounds a little lower, like whatever the fundamental frequency is.
It still sounds like poop.
It's not subsonic. It's just it's not, instead of like white noise is a bit of a radio static. Pink noise is like a whoosh, like you're at a spa.
Well, give it a Oh, yeah.
And brown noise is maybe lower still, like,
okay.
I don't know. If you could do it with your mouth, you wouldn't need to spend $50 on one of these things on Amazon.
That's not true. You're not going to put yourself to sleep by lying in bed going,
no, you're
going to
hire someone.
Oh, you might.
Yeah, I'm going to task grab it. Just a guy to sit by my bed going,
until you're fast asleep.
But the thing I noticed is, like, if I were to move, like, either my head, like turn the angle of my ears, or like if I bumped my lamp on my nightstand, suddenly the pink noise would be making a different vowel sound. Like the pink noise would be saying ooh, and then I would turn my head and now it's saying e or ah.
What?
And
because of the shape of your ear canal or your proximity to it, you're just changing some Doppler.
Yeah, I'm just making that little space of my room a differently shaped resonator. And to the degree that the brain is good at trying to pull out sounds from these random little fluctuations in air pressure caused by the waves, the sound waves, my brain is now reading it differently. Like, oh, this is what, I'm trained by speech.
Yeah.
This is now close to an E or an ah sound. And it was the weirdest thing. Like, it really made me like think too much about how the ears work. And now I don't like any sounds at all, and I live in a cave.
Are you going to be like moving lamps around in your room to try and create the perfect sonic atmosphere?
The perfect vowel?
Because this is a thing that recording engineers do all the time.
Exactly. This is who knows about this, is audio engineers.
Yeah. And they're creating these perfect environments because there are standing bass waves that they need to correct by putting a quarter on top of a Coke can. But
they're not wrong. Like, literally, I will tilt the book. If I have a book up and I tilt it or I turn a page, suddenly the pink noise will go as I turn the page because I've changed the shape of my little human larynx I'm living in.
Yeah, we're really just meat bags.
It's true. And you don't want to think about it.
No.
But given how good your meat bag is at turning like those waveforms into meaning, it means that somebody with a drum, a talking drum under their arm, has a lot of options available to convey meaning. Yeah, they can convey the tones precisely, but then, you know, even if they can't tell you consonants, they can, you know, the prosody, the rhythm of what you're saying, like a guy with a drum could be like, the rhythm of what you're saying, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, or the intensity, like, you know, the stress on a certain syllable, that can convey information about what word or sound that might be in that syllable.
But is this being used to communicate across distances, or is this all around a campfire where stories are being told?
It's both.
Oh.
So, you know, the same technique, you know, you might hear a poem around a campfire, but then the next day it might be like, the chief wants everyone to know his guests have arrived, and then the word goes out. Because often it would be, traditionally a king or a chief would have a drum, and it would be like a symbol of his power, like a scepter or a crown. You know, he would have a very fancy... His might have bells or beeswax on the head to kind of affect or give options to the tone. And the other way that you can convey meaning, to like draw out meaning, is often short ideas get expanded. So instead of saying he has returned, maybe lots of things can sound like but you kind of expand it in a poetic form. You know, you might say, he has brought back his legs. He has brought back his feet.
Hmm.
And so like that gives you more syllables to play with. And, you know, it lends a quasi Morse code thing where, he's added, I understand that pattern that represents this idea of travel or whatever. So now I have an idea of what's being conveyed. So there is a separate language, but really the root of it is the spoken Yoruba language and the pitches that the drummer is approximating.
Is there repetition in it? I mean, I imagine if you're sitting and doing your normal stuff and people are talking and all of a sudden you hear boop-ba-da-boop-ba-doo coming over the hill, you're going to be like, whoa, 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 everybody shut up. I missed the first part of it.
I missed the beginning.
Yeah. So is it a thing? Because, you know, any drum performance, once it starts, you're like, hey, you know, I hope this keeps going for a while.
They invented a drum DVR where a different drummer is always listening.
Uh-huh.
And then if you miss part of it, you ask him what they played and he'll play it back.
He's just sitting on a hill, like, yeah, waiting.
He's always listening.
Silent Hill.
Like the Pink Noise guy that I'm going to hire to whir on my... No, I think you're right. I think if it was something that people needed to know, like this is urgent... you know, here's a public service announcement. Yeah, basically, that would be the equivalent of newsreel, where it would play over and over.
Attention, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea.
But imagine, it's got a lot of the vocal qualities of spoken speech. So it really is more like a guy on a megaphone. It's more like a, you know, choppers coming into the 4077. It's more like a guy talking to you over a PA than it is like a Morse code getting keyed over a wire, you know? But again, it's hundreds of years before each, which is very cool. And now there's new study of this going on. You know, Arizona State musicologist named Cecilia Durojaye just won some awards for actually getting some of these drummers into a lab and looking at the waveform of what they're playing and conveying and comparing it with the spoken Yoruba and saying, yeah, like you can absolutely see, like this is not just a Morse code type thing. This is linguistic content, but being spoken through a drum the way the Donald Duck guy speaks through his cheeks.
Whoa.
She calls it speech surrogacy. It's not quite speech, but it's a stand-in your armpit, basically.
No, I like that a lot, speech surrogacy.
Because, you know, when I talk with my armpit and I do the farting noise, that is not speech surrogacy.
Is it not, though?
No, it's sad trombone. I can convey one thing, which is either I'm bored or you suck.
Right.
But with one of these, she says, talking drum is unique in that it has a foot in both language and music camps. Mm-hmm. And then this can be used to study, to like make novel discoveries about how linguistics works, how the brain works, how the brain interprets speech, how music works. Its existence reminds us of the thin boundary between speech and music.
I mean, you know, that's so true in a lot of ways. Not.
Yeah, as a songwriter, you must think about this all the time.
Well, you do, and there are a lot of instruments that mimic the sound of a human voice, the harmonica, the slide guitar.
Oh, I've never thought about that.
And they have a place in the mix of a song that is, you know, anytime you mix a record, the vocals and the bass are right up the middle in terms of a stereo mix, left, right, right up the middle, vocals and bass, typically. And then the other instruments are panned. So your rhythm guitar is going to be panned to the right, your piano is panned to the left in order to get that stereo. And that was what made mono recordings so cool and interesting, was they were all right up the middle. And you had to...
Everything had to play well together.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody was in a mix together. And now you can kind of screw it up, basically, by, oh, well, you can put too much stuff in a mix.
And if I understand it right, when you're panning something so that it's like left center, that means it's in both channels, but it's more in the left. And the brain interprets that as...
coming from a place.
Yeah, my right ear hears it a little. So it's not way over on the left, but it's mostly... it's like north-northwest.
Yeah, and a lot of the modern technology of mixing that's... surround sound can make things appear to be behind you.
Right.
There was a fad in the 2000s, like, oh, all records are going to be mixed this way in 7.1 surround.
Dolby 7.1.
And people were like, no, that's not
actually. It turns out you don't want any of the band behind you.
Yeah, like, hey, Ringo, get over
here.
How
did they get over there? Why am I on stage?
But for sure, if you've got a guitar that's coming in as a lead instrument, you're going to want to foreground it it's absolutely in the same frequency range as a human voice, and it's doing that job. Like, it becomes the lead communicator. And that, you know, if you think about blues music, a lot of the lyrics are repetitive, you know, classic blues, repetitive and kind of telling a story that then the guitar really fleshes out. And that's so true in rock music too. And I mean, jazz is all
100%
about the horn doing the work of the voice.
Different instrumentation can take over at different parts of the song.
But we've lost or never had the sense that, that actually was a surrogate that could convey more information than just melody.
It's interesting that European culture does not appear to have these things that South American indigenous people, that tons of African and Asian people had, where the tonality of the instrument can convey something akin to speech.
No, it was always going to be speech that did the speeching.
Is it because we were like less communal? We're just we're just in our little mud cottages up in Northern Europe.
I wonder about communicating across distance.
I mean, we still had trumpets and stuff.
Trumpets, but that was just like to scare the other army.
And it was just a signal. Yeah, there's like a small set of canned messages you can give with a trumpet.
But I wonder if there's something about a savanna environment where the drums travel much further that maybe wouldn't be true in a forested environment.
It's true that, like, obviously the dawn of modern communication has kind of led to a decline in the talking drum's importance in the community as a way of getting news around. But of course, it still has an important cultural impact, and it's a, you know, music festivals are built around the drum just as something to listen to, dance to, and hear messages from. But one interesting historical footnote to this is that when West African people were enslaved in the New World, you know, of course, they brought a lot of their musical traditions, but the talking drums in particular were banned by slave owners who realized their linguistic potential. Like, this is a way that these enslaved people can communicate.
That's across plantations.
Across distance between plantations. And that's an uh-oh.
No,
because
right.
that's where the mass uprisings that they're terrified of can happen. And crucially, it's something we can't understand because they're expressing it in their African languages. And the most famous case there was an uprising. This is not well remembered, but in September of 1739 on the coast of South Carolina, because it was near the Stono River, it's called the Stono Rebellion. And a slave variously called Jemmy or Cato, both of which appear to be, you know, given Western names, probably not Jemmy's real name. He's described as Angolan in the account, but I guess there's plenty of other attestation that was just the kind of random thing that white people would say without actually knowing the
origin. Well, and also they came through Angola, and so, yeah, Angolan.
But, you know, they would use all these kind of weird, exoticized...
Right.
I was just looking at the old...
Zulu.
We were over... Yeah, exactly. We were over by Broadmoor Golf Course, you know, that gated community over in...
Do I know it?
You're going to move there?
No, they won't let me in.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at the old covenants in the 20s because that's where it's like, no one of the Hebrew, it's listing the people who can't move there. And it says literally no one of the Hebrew, Ethiopian, or Malay extractions.
Yeah, right. That covers everybody.
Yeah, you don't want Ethiopians and Malays moving in.
No, my there friend, goes the you neighborhood. Do not.
But it sounds like some like kind of smart race scientist's way of saying people of color, you know, like instead of saying African or Asian American.
It's phrenological almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no one with a nose that looks like
the typical skull of the Malay. Yeah. So yeah, Ethiopian and I think that's what happened to Jemmy. Like, he's called Angolan, but maybe more likely to be Congolese. Anyway, in 1739, George II has just declared war on Spain.
Yeah.
And
we should probably still have a war on Spain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then we wouldn't have their delicious patatas bravas.
Yeah. I could live without them.
You think you can make your own better tapas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what's good in tapas and what's bad.
We're going to make freedom tapas. We don't need pan con tomate anymore. We'll probably have a show on the War of Jenkins' Ear at some point. But, you know, this is what became the War of Jenkins' Ear. And we did do a show, I think, on this this Spanish tactic of saying, hey, black people, come down to Florida.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll have freedom and free black towns for you. All you need to do is kill your masters, and then it's all good. So
Spain's got a great record.
You know,
case.
You know who's good on race is the Spanish, but they're using it just to incite slave uprisings. And in this case, it worked. This appears to be the inciting element that tells Jemmy that his long planned rebellion should happen. And I think the real inciting element is that the week before, the South Carolina Colonial Assembly passes a law saying everybody must bring their guns to church.
That sounds like a country song.
I mean, that sounds like, I'm sure that's still a law in South Carolina today. But in this case, the idea is do not leave any of your firearms unattended at home on a Sunday morning.
Okay.
Because
right.
that's when,
yeah, sure.
if you're a slave owner, that's when people are going to rise up and seize the plantation. So Jemmy realizes, oh, if they start taking their guns, because that was his plan, like Sunday morning, this is when we're going to do this.
Right. It's the Tet Offensive. It's the,
yeah, exactly.
it's the Yom Kippur War.
And so realizing that, you know, his window is about to close if everybody starts taking their guns to church. He and his band rise up, take over the plantation.
Using talking drums?
Well, here's the thing. They end up marching south after they've taken the plantation. It's an escape that turns into an uprising. Uh-huh. You know, he and his escapees march south away from their plantation. And in the meantime, they're burning fields. They're actually killing people in pretty brutal ways. I mean, one thing you have to reckon with looking at the history of slave uprising is you're like,
what have we got?
Yeah. I mean, you're still going to be like rah-rah to the escaping slaves. Cause you know, really they put up with a lot, but also like terrible things are happening. Terrible violence is going to happen.
Right. But they're recruiting other people to their cause as they march.
They're marching with drums and they start playing the drums and apparently they're communicating, you know, rhythms that people from their part of West Africa would recognize.
Right, of course.
And so the uprising starts to spread and it becomes a bigger and bigger group.
Can you imagine how exciting that would be that if you were enslaved and all of a sudden you hear like approaching drums like, where you're like, what the?
And it's like from home.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, like, and
how scary that would be to some overseer who's like, whoa, 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 wait a minute.
But it appears to be not be a super tightly run operation. At some point, they stop in a field to celebrate with, quote, the rum they had taken in the houses.
Oh, your first mistake.
Their first mistake is they brought all the rum they could get their hands on when they left the house, and they're celebrating their new freedom a little too soon.
Yeah, they stopped.
And that lets the militia catch up. But they use their, at that point, they continue to use the drums to call more help from surrounding plantations. More black people in the area rise up and escape. And it leads to basically weeks of fighting covering 30 miles of terrain because they've been able to use their talking drums to essentially turn an escape into a military
campaign. Is this in the Georgia swamps? Am I remembering this correctly? Florida border
it's pretty,
type thing?
No, it's pretty – no, this is in the South – it's in the southern kind of coastal area of South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
But it is pretty close to the Georgia border. Yeah. I don't know what that – I don't know what
also
that terrain looks like.
Around there.
Might be.
Low. It's lowland.
That's what they call it, right?
Yeah.
The low country of South Carolina. Anyway, this leads once Jemmy or Cato's uprising is put down, this leads to a new slave code of 1740 in South Carolina, which includes a specific ban on
drums.
Enslaved people owning drums because they realize this is the way these people talk, you know, like and we're gonna do whatever it takes. And so all the drums were confiscated, and there's actually some 20th century theory, and I don't know what to think about this, but there's some interesting 20th century theory that this is where these black communities, then still enslaved, move on to drum surrogates, like slapping parts of your body or stomping on different resonant objects. So basically creating what became the black tradition of American tap.
Oh, wow. Oh, sure.
Like tap dancing is a remnant of a time when you want a drum, but master is taking your drums.
Oh.
And then from there on to Bobby McFerrin and
right.
stomp and bring the noise, you know, all these traditions in African American culture may have been a result of the talking drum, you know, trying to keep the tradition of the talking drum alive without the drum.
Well, and Delta Blues has a real like stomp clap kind of element
right.
to what, and then, you know, and even on the guitar, it's very percussive.
What's interesting is that like these kind of bands did not happen to enslaved populations in South America, like Latin America. And I think it's pretty well understood that that's kind of the birth of Afro-Cuban music. Like that's why there were none of these great percussive movements that came out of the American South. It became, as you say, Delta Blues or whatever. But in the Caribbean, they hadn't had their drums taken away. So you get these amazing kind of dance beats that give you all modern Latin music.
Well, and the clave too, I bet you could hear that. Although it's a high-pitched instrument, I bet you could hear it at quite a distance.
But
it's very communicative.
You think you can say stuff?
Well, it's just, I mean, it certainly says stuff to me that's incomprehensible. I've tried to understand the clave for years. in Afro-Cuban music, and I'm like, it's so over my pay grade.
But it doesn't have the literal, like, Peter Frampton talk box quality of these drums where...
I don't know.
Maybe it does if you speak the language.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly gets you up out of your chair.
That's what it's for now. And it was then. It was get up out of your chair and go burn down the plantation house.
Right. But that was an intermediary idea. But yeah, I mean, if you think, I mean, the vast, vast majority of slaves that came across the Atlantic went to South America and Central America.
I think that's true.
And yeah, well, I mean, that whole culture is not defined, but certainly it's a different style.
Think how good Southern music would be today if...
the drums had stuck around?
Yeah, if 18th century whites had not banned African drum traditions.
Well, the problem is it's all them Appalachians. They came down and, well, yeah, they ruined everything they touched.
No, then you'd have both.
Oh, well, you do still have both.
You'd have whatever their Scotch-Irish stuff is. And
we have rock and country.
But then you'd have merengue. Like, think about if you turn on country radio today and it's got like Paul Simon, you know, David Byrne sounding.
Yeah, that could be cool.
You know, from the Black Panther soundtrack, pitch bending drums.
The thing is that even country music is now just rock and roll music with twangy vocals.
I guess that is the ultimate win of black music. Is
that's right. It's just no.
That's what country is now. But it's about jeans. These jeans are so tight.
And that concludes Talking Drums. Entry 1275.1C1407. Certificate number 51913 in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media is the worst. And from the time we started saying social media is the worst,
it got so much worse. We were ahead of the curve.
And it keeps getting worse. It's astonishing how bad it is, and yet it's nowhere near reaching its bottom.
Rock bottom still coming.
Have you noticed, or did you read this morning, that the United States Congress has made TikTok, put TikTok on notice? Did you read that on your...
Think about all the extra time I'm going to get back.
Not watching TikTok.
Now that I'm not learning all those dances.
Yeah, this is the thing that starts it off. This kicks it off, Ken. The big conflict between the U.S. and China. It's who owns TikTok.
Oh, I thought you meant the conflict between Gen Z and us.
No, I was at a tennis court the other day, and there were some Gen Zs there. And I told them, one of them was wearing a hat.
How dare they?
Up on top of his head, and his friends were like, dude, your hat looks stupid. Take your hat off. But he was clearly Mr. Cool, and he was like, you don't even know what's cool. And I was on a neighboring court, and I said, that hat's totally drip. You don't know what you're talking about. And it actually got a positive response briefly before they went back to thinking I really sucked. I mean, they knew I was...
That can go both ways.
Yeah.
Sometimes they think you'll suck more.
Yeah, they knew I was yanking it, but they also applauded my hilarious adult misuse of drip.
Nice.
But we're here to tell you, futurelings, get off of social media. My God, are you still on there? I know Ken is still on there. He's over on Mastodon posting his funnies.
I am not on Mastodon.
But I'm on Instagram, and it doesn't improve anything.
I should probably get on Instagram, because now people are like, hey, you should help us promote this walk for pancreatic cancer. And I'm like, sure, I'll put it in my church newsletter. Like, who the hell am I going to tell?
If you were on Instagram, it'd be a big hit. What would you... You'd just be posting your Lego builds.
Well, no, I'm always... Everything I put on social media now is just some picture I took.
Yeah, but you do cool things. You go to places.
Go to places.
But a lot of them have NDAs, right? You can't take a picture from the stage of your keynote speech at IBM.
I could take backstage Jeopardy pics.
Yeah, yeah.
I was putting pictures of Mount St. Helens up every time I flew over it.
I saw that. That was a real winner.
I could get back to that. Until it erupts.
Yeah, just get St. Helens pics 134. Anyway, you can find at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick, sort of out there if you want. You can email us, which we do encourage, at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Now, I just read something online where someone had been sending us mail for 4 years to omnibusproject@gmail.com, and somehow we don't read that.
Which you and I think we must have owned at some point.
We do, but
now we don't.
Can't find. No, it's theomnibusproject@gmail.com if you want us to actually get your letter.
The Omnibus Project.
Yeah.
Accept no substitutes.
And you can find that, and I found that comment on the Futurelings page on Facebook, but there are Futurelings other places too, Discord, Discordant.
Dysentery.
Yeah, distemper. Disinterrogation.
Dysfunction.
Anything that has the word dis in it, you can find the Futurelings. I know there's an active Reddit community.
I like when dis words start with D-Y-S.
Yeah.
That's when it's the real stuff.
Dysphoria.
Dysfunction, dysphoria, dysentery. Mm. How come the cool words get the Y? Like what makes discrimination or disgruntled?
It's got to be rooted in whether it's a Roman or, it's either like a Scandinavian, Roman, or...
You are correct. D-Y is from Greek.
There you go.
For bad or abnormal. D with an I is Latin, meaning away from or opposite. So it's Latin for un, but it's actually Greek for our sicko.
Sicko. But it comes from the same... Comes from the Latins, cop and the Greeps, right? Greeps. You can send us mail at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington 98155. We've got an overflowing mailbag, don't we?
I have so much mail. I don't even know what to do with this.
Well, lay it on us.
Let's see. Ty sent us a postcard from the Osage Nation because he happened to be passing through Pawhuska, Oklahoma.
Well done, Ty.
Site of a previous omnibus entry and a Oscar-winning movie. Oh, this is my friend Fritz, who listened to the Great Idaho Beaver Drop episode. And wanted to salute John for referencing applets and cotlets.
Yeah, high fives.
That is surely the deepest of old Pacific Northwest cuts. But what is this postcard? Oh, it's the Spokane River. The U.S. Pavilion on the Spokane River. Oh, this is from the Spokane Expo in 74. Yeah. Well done. You figured out before I did, and you weren't even looking at the postcard. let me see, what else do we have here? Joe feels a great affinity with you, John, because he is your age, has a beard, has a child with the same name as your child, but spelled differently.
Right.
Was also subject to political machinations that kept him from being editor of the school newspaper.
Okay.
I always forget this part of your bio. Is that, do you always lead with that when you do events?
I mean, that was a traumatic event in my life.
But he sent us each a copy of his story collection, Last Songs and True Magic, which includes his novella True Magic as well as other shorter works.
Short stories.
Thank you,
my favorite,
Joe,
of all the formats.
They are. It's my favorite, too, because of my utter lack of attention span.
Well, but also, don't you agree? I mean, the best songwriting is even better than short stories. The best poetry, but there's so much bad poetry, how do you even find the good
stuff?
It's
true.
Whereas I think a short story of the novels, of all the kinds of novel, I think the short story can be the best.
Eli sent us a copy of his book, The Dictionary of Fine Distinctions. I think because I asked him about it, it's kind of it's thesaurus adjacent.
But only one copy.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be reading this and Joe's book while you will be looking longingly over at me laughing away. It's a commonly confused word. So, this page explains the difference between a ristorante versus a trattoria.
Sure.
What's the difference between a parable and a fable, a robbery or theft? What
even is a shrimp scampi?
What do you confuse shrimp scampi with?
Well, I mean, it's a redundancy.
What's the difference between accuracy and
proficiency?
And precision.
Accuracy and precision. Well, use that as an example. What is the difference between accuracy and precision?
We will never know because I just lost the page. Here we go. Accuracy refers to how close you are to what's correct, whereas precision refers to how finely you're measuring.
Yes.
So it's more like the resolution of the measurement. This is a very, this is a great book idea, Eli. I love this kind of thing.
And it's also a hardback, so...
Yes, I don't want to... Joe appears to have self-published this book, which good for him. Enraged Fez put out Joe's book. But Eli got a book deal from Union Square and Company.
Huh.
He's been featured in the Toronto Star, National Post, and on CBC Radio. John, this man...
is a Canadian.
Bears all the marks of being a Canadian. But it's okay. Their language is...
close enough. Well, look at the spellings in there. Are there extraneous U's?
I want to see if there's any weird, like, Canadian distinctions here. What's the difference between...
What's the difference between a Timbit and a donut hole?
Yeah, it would be food, right?
Yeah.
It would be something like that.
Well, how many kinds of bacon are there?
Oh, yeah.
What's the difference between
back bacon?
Yeah, bacon, bacon, and bacon.
And then we also got from, this was a favorite of mine, Keith listened to our show on placebos and remembered a commercial that he had made for a product he's been selling online for 15 years, kind of as a placebo, but let's be honest, as a novelty gift. It came to us in a big box that said penisreductionpills.com on the outside, which is always what you want your mailman to know about you, that you're ordering penis reduction. And here you go, John. Here's a 30-day supply
of penis reduction pills.
Compares to the active ingredients in sweet tart candies. So this guy is putting sweet tarts in a pill bottle looking thing, calling them penis reduction pills, probably at an 8,000% markup.
Yeah. Well, the thing about a peanuts reduction bottle is you could see, you know, flashing one as a potentially like as a mating device. Like, yeah, look, I have to take these. That's what it's for. But then you're going to get found out pretty fast.
It doesn't.
Or you can say it works. What used to be a really problematic situation has been solved.
Hey, look, he actually puts the cotton balls in the top.
Are they shaped like balls?
Oh, these are just okay. It's funny. He just took out the banana runts, I think.
And they look like bananas.
And they look like bananas.
Wait a minute. Can you afford to take one of those? Stop, Ken.
Well, it's gonna disappear into a sub-universe. No, I need all these I can take.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Keith, for sending us these amazing placebos.
What's that? There's a bumper sticker in there if you really want to put that on the back of your electric car.
Oh, you're right. There is. I think if you have an electric car, everyone knows you need penis reduction pills.
You could put those on the back of any Tesla truck and it would be a big laugh.
But here they spell out the joke. The bumper sticker says, "I wouldn't be taking them if I wasn't certain that mine was abundantly large."
Huh, that's pretty spelled out.
They asked ChatGPT to come up with a slogan. Keith, this is amazing. Thank you for sending us these. They're not sweet tarts. They're, you know, runts are not.
Yeah,
what is it runts from? That are the fruit flavors? Yes, right?
Yeah, I or avoid nerds. All that kind of candy.
I don't like that kind of candy either.
But you're eating one.
Well, I need to. Yeah. Anything that comes from those big supermarket bins.
Yeah.
That's not good candy, right?
No. No, and I'm not a sugar candy person. I'm a chocolate candy person.
Chocolate only, right?
Yeah, that's my policy.
And you can still play with the shrink wrap. Thank you so much.
Shrink wrap. Am I right?
Bubble wrap. There we go. Oh, shrink wrap. I just got it.
Thank you. Oh, and then, Ken, I want to tell you one more thing, and that that you should support our show.
I should?
You should. You should stop denigrating our show.
Haven't I done enough?
No, you should support it, too, by going to patreon.com. You would actually have to log out of our Patreon account, start a new account under your own name, and then support our show.
Am I allowed to donate to my own Patreon?
I don't think from your Patreon account, which
sit
is
sit on your hand until it's numb, then get online and give to your own Patreon.
And they won't know it's you.
Exactly.
Hold up your iPhone to your own face, but wear an eye patch.
It's called the Patreon Stranger.
But no, we really do appreciate your support at patreon.com/omnibusproject. And we appreciate it so much that in return for your support, we give you all kinds of cool things, including
penis reduction pills.
Penis reduction pills, one each, wrapped in shrink wrap. I'm going to just keep emphasizing my own joke. But we give you every episode of Omnibus ad-free 2 days before the rest of the world gets it.
Wow.
That's right. And also, a whole bunch now, probably more than 50 addenda shows. Probably what? It's nearing 100.
It's 60-ish now, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
It's more than 50. It must be 100.
Basically, it's the same as when I ask people, like, how far it is to the next town. Well, if it's less than 50, it's got to be 10. And if it's more than 50, it's got
to
be 100.
If you round up to the nearest 100, we have 100. Addenda shows.
But the addenda are great shows. We're actually recording one later today.
I'm going to keep doing them. what do ASMR people think of this?
Where we reply to your letters, and a lot of the time we take a fair amount of abuse before Ken starts to say, no.
Listen up.
No. Actually, no, I do not accept that.
I don't need to put up with this.
But it's very good, and there's other stuff there, too, at different levels. You can, I mean, there are photographs, and we send you things. It's really a wonderful thing.
So many prizes.
So, that's patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we so fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. What if the show ended with penis reduction pills? The end.
And then it's all over.
Is that an old CRT TV going down to the white dot?
Da, 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 da.
Oh, you didn't watch the anthem? Don't you love America?
I always did. Well, and then in Alaska, there was an additional thing.
Russian anthem.
No, it was called Alaska Is.
What?
And it was Pachelbel's Canon.
What?
And then pictures of the majesty of Alaska and then some other things.
You guys are not American.
And then the national anthem with a picture of the flag waving.
At least they did Alaska first and then ended with America.
Yeah. But Alaska Is was a big, I don't know, if you were up that late, you stayed and watched Alaska Is. Because, you know, Pachelbel's Canon, everybody likes it.
Hey, did you see Alaska Is last night? But, as I was saying, if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.